Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Obama's warm and fuzzies over at Langley.
Ladies and gentlemen of the CIA, I am proud to introduce President of the United States.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Thank you. Well, thanks. Thank you for the extraordinary welcome. And thanks for those of you who prepared from the CIA gift shop, the T-shirts, the caps, the water bottles. Michelle and the girls will appreciate that very much.
That was back in April, but what would those T-shirts say today? The Obama administration opens investigations into the CIA's interrogation tactics during the Bush years. It could be the opening shot in a long interagency war. DOJ versus CIA. Shock and awe or another quagmire? On The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning, everyone. It's Tuesday, August 25th. I'm John Hockenberry here with Femi Okay all week.
Good morning, Femi. Hello there, John. Good morning, everybody.
So also on the program, we're going to take a look at the post-Madoff revenue stream. It's maybe not worth $50 billion, but it's a living for some. Afghanistan counts votes and blessings this morning, and circumcision to prevent HIV infection. It involves some very tough decisions for parents. But first, Vijay Padmanabhan, former State Department legal advisor for a number of Guantanamo terrorist cases. You're now at NYU Law School. If this is formerly DOJ versus CIA, how long of a war could we be looking at here?
Unfortunately, it could be a really long war. Once the court process begins, you never know where it's going to end.
And you never know what we might find out.
Yeah, that's exactly the scary thing.
More from Vijay Padmanabhan in just a few minutes, but first, everything else you need to know this morning, Femi.
In the headlines, Fed Chair Ben Bernanke is apparently getting another term later this morning. The president is expected to announce he's reappointing Bernanke to lead the Fed. One of the youngest Guantanamo Bay prisoners ever is now back home in Afghanistan. He was held almost 7 years. Afghanistan's Election Commission is due to release partial results from the contested presidential vote today. Final results aren't expected until next month.
Here's a healthcare story. Back in the U.S., at least 1,200 Gulf War veterans have been mistakenly told they have Lou Gehrig's disease. The Department of Veterans Affairs accidentally sent letters to the veterans notifying them of their disability benefits for the fatal neurological disease, which they didn't really have. So I guess that's Good news that it's not true. Car dealers will have a little more time to file their cash for clunkers paperwork online. The government extended the paperwork deadline because of problems with the program's website. And it's a no-go for NASA today. Lightning and heavy rains forced NASA to postpone the Discovery launch. They'll try again tomorrow. Markets mostly flat yesterday. The Dow opens today at 9509. The S&P starts trading at 1026. And the NASDAQ begins at 2018. If you're a young person, you have a decision to make. Do you get insurance?
I'm 41 now, but when I was 21 and I didn't have health insurance, I ended up getting appendicitis. And it cost me about $4,500 anesthetic fees alone. Yeah, you might feel like you're invincible, but little things can happen that will throw you for a loop.
We're convening healthcare discussions of our own here at The Takeaway. Yesterday it was doctors. This morning, young people. It's a rite of passage, getting insurance. What's your story? Is it worth getting insurance when you're young? Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway.
Good morning, everyone. I'm John Hockenberry here with Femi Okay. So you might say, Femi, that the story of the CIA's interrogation techniques at Guantanamo is a durable franchise. Looking into the misdeeds of the CIA, whether they jumped or were actually pushed, is about as durable as, say, the Robert Ludlum, Jason Bourne franchise, wouldn't you say?
It's a thriller.
And the DOJ is going to have its hands full when it tries to get into what actually happened at Guantanamo, sort of in the same way that the CIA officials had some difficulty figuring out what exactly Treadstone was.
Operation Treadstone.
Never heard of it.
It's not going to fly.
With all due respect, Pam, I think you might have wandered a little past your pay grade.
That's a warrant from Director Marshall granting me unrestricted access to all personnel materials associated with Treadstone.
What are we looking at?
I want to know about it.
Know about it? It was a kill squad, black on black. We closed it down 2 years ago. Nobody wants to know about Treadstone, not around here. So I think you better take this back to Marty and let him know exactly what you're doing.
He does. I've been down to the archives. I have the files, Ward.
You want to fry me? You want my desk, is that it? Then let's cut the crap. I'm due to retire next year, but if you think I'm going to sit here and let you dangle me with this, you can go to hell. It had to be done.
The Bourne supremacy there, and the whole scene is going to be played out over the next several months, possibly even years, with the release, first of all, yesterday of an Inspector General's report, which has been kicking around in the federal government since 2004, at least, about interrogation techniques. Also, we have the announcement that John Durham is going to be a prosecutor to actually take a look at some of the abuse cases at Guantanamo. And joining us now to talk about all this is Vijay Padmanabhan, again, visiting assistant professor from Cardozo Law School here in New York City. And you were formerly a State Department chief counsel on a number of Guantanamo cases. Vijay, thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here.
Also, Mark Danner is here, author of the book Torture and Truth, America, Abu Ghraib, and the War on Terror. Mark, you've written extensively on a lot of the details that now we see in this report that came out yesterday and still was extraordinarily redacted. First of all, if there is an orderly examination of the record during the Bush years on Guantanamo, what are we likely to learn, and what details did you see yesterday that are particularly disturbing?
Well, there are a number of details that were quite disturbing. They've been leaked in the past few days. They had to do with threats against family members, for example, physical threats against detainees, including the use of handguns, firing guns in the cell next to the detainee and threatening him with imminent execution, use of a power drill, and the threat to use that on the detainee's body, the threat to kill the children of one detainee.
Describe that one. That's Khalid Sheikh Mohammed.
Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, and essentially he was told that if there was another attack in the United States, that his children would be killed.
Now, Mark, you know, in the United States, there are probably a lot of people who will read that this morning and go, well, damn right.
Well, you're probably right about that. The fact is, though, that making such threats against family members or indeed mock executions or threats against the life of detainees themselves is explicitly illegal against the law.
I understand that. Does the emotional baggage associated with 9/11 and this whole sort of post 9/11 era complicate the matters for prosecutors?
Well, of course it does. There's no question that the political situation, as you pointed out in your last question, is rather fraught. I mean, it's a controversial matter within the United States whether these things should be investigated at all. The Democrats are clearly ambivalent about it. Some want to go full speed ahead. Some are less eager. The president himself has declared repeatedly his preference for looking forward and not back. On the other hand, this report now has been released. The Attorney General, it looks like, is going to hand things over to a special counsel whose job it will be to look at a handful of cases identified in the report, which, as you said, was produced in 2004 within the CIA itself by its Inspector General. A handful of cases that seem to go beyond the explicit guidelines set out by the Department of Justice in a series of memoranda in 2002 and later in report in 2005. So essentially what they're limiting the investigation to, or at least this is the idea, is to those acts or cases that went beyond what the Bush administration explicitly decided were legal.
Right, and this is about a handful of cases, maybe a half dozen cases, but again...
Well, I think a few more than that. I think it's 10 or 12.
10 or 12.
The thing is, though, the important thing I think to point out for your listeners is that this decision is kind of a middle ground. You know, waterboarding was, and other techniques were declared legal by Bush Justice Department officials in a series of fairly notorious memorandums in 2002 and later reaffirmed in 2005. And this includes using waterboarding or feigned suffocation.
But in these cases, it goes beyond those things that were explicitly approved.
Exactly.
All right, hold on there just for a second. Mark Danner, author of the book Torture and Truth, America, Abu Ghraib, and the War on Terror. Vijay Padmanabhan. You know, we talked at the top that on some level, this is an interagency war between DOJ and CIA. Mark has described that these cases relate to things that were even beyond what the Bush administration declared to be legal, which already we understand to be controversial. How difficult is it to prepare a case when you've got layers of actual legality, a sort of a concocted, rationalized legality to extend it to something like waterboarding, and then people who just really went off the reservation completely?
Well, I think we have good reason to believe it's going to be very hard to prosecute these cases, because back in the Bush administration, Justice Department officials, non-political Justice Department officials, investigated these cases and concluded that they did not have the evidence they needed to bring prosecutions of these officials.
Now, is that because the evidence doesn't exist, or that the open court issues of classified documents, the same kinds of things that plagued the Bush administration actually getting convictions at Gitmo, are going to be relevant here?
Yeah, it's an evidentiary problem more than anything else, indeed.
And, I mean, evidentiary problem, but it doesn't mean, and again, this is to Mark Danner, it doesn't mean it's not true. It means that they can't get the evidence because it's classified and the CIA will be able to protect itself.
Well,
right, Vijay?
Well, I think
to be fair, we don't know. I mean, we can identify several reasons and we can surmise why officials in the Bush administration decided not to go forward with prosecutions. I don't think it's the case that we know that we can simply say, well, it had to do with evidence or whatever. There were decisions that they made that in none of these cases would they prosecute.
Right, right. Okay, hold on one second. Let me get Vijay to continue his thought. And again, you were a State Department counsel on at least four of the cases, right?
We were involved in a range of things, not in this particular decision whether to prosecute
or understood.
Not. But I think what's important to make to be clear here is that it was, in fact, career officials in the Justice Department that were making these decisions, not political officials. So, I think it's important not to suggest that it was a political decision not to prosecute.
Although, certainly, there was much precedent for political coercion of career officials in DOJ and among prosecutors inside the Bush administration. Isn't that fair?
That may be fair.
It's not outlandish to say that there would be political pressure.
That may be the case. I think as you pointed out in the Guantanamo context, it's very often the case that the information you have is hidden under many layers of secret informants and so forth, so it's difficult to bring a case like this.
No, I'm hogging everything here, Femi. Go ahead.
Vijay, what do you surmise about these cases? Are they going to be scapegoat cases? What highlights these particular ones?
Well, what makes this different from the typical case is that these are situations in which CIA officers decided to go well beyond what the Justice Department had authorized.
Right.
I think the danger, though, is that these small number of cases become the poster child for what was a larger, more institutionalized program, and Americans start to think, well, now that we've put these 10 people away, we don't need to have to deal with the larger question of what interrogation practices we should be using.
Well, the interesting issue on the larger question, and Mark Danner, a quick comment on this from both of you, Mark, and Vijay, before we go. The FBI apparently is setting up its own interrogation squad for future cases. Do you view that as a rational attempt to get these kinds of interrogations in the sphere to where they belong, where there can be proper oversight? Or do you see the Obama administration basically enshrining what the Bush administration did informally, where they would just whistle up some sort of rationale from DOJ whenever they wanted to interrogate?
No, I clearly think they're trying to institutionalize it in and regularize it, no question about that. And they're also explicitly want to get rid of these techniques. There's no question about that. But I have to say, by the way, I think the broader point here is that in deciding to go only for these cases that went beyond these set boundaries set out by the Bush administration, there is a danger that some of the things that were done that were declared legal but that are very, very questionable, like waterboarding itself,
that they will look like the rationalists. They become the center. The extreme becomes
exactly.
the center.
That's exactly
all right.
Right.
We got to go there, Mark. We just got a couple seconds. Last word, Vijay.
It's dangerous to set up these teams, but it's a requirement in the world we're in.
All right, interesting discussion. Vijay Padmanabhan, visiting assistant professor, Cardozo School of Law. Mark Danner, author of the book Torture and Truth. Thanks to both of you. You know, you can catch the show live Monday through Friday. Thanks for listening. If you have any feedback or think there's any stories we should be covering on The Takeaway, contact us at 1-877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. See ya.